This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the 1912 Exiles podcast, the Newport County podcast that's made by the fans for the fans. I'm your host Jamie Harris, and for this week's episode we have a special guest. I won't keep you in suspense because, well, you've already read the episode title. So in lieu of a match report from that excellent win at Forest Green on Saturday, a result which has cemented the pod's current view that while this season will be inconsistent, we're going to be looking up the table rather than over our shoulders. Unless Coughlin happens to leave, then all bets are off. It was great to see Will Evans getting in on the goals again on Saturday. We said over the summer that he works hard and that he just needs to add a few more goals to his game. Topping the League Two scoring charts with 5 goals plus a 6th in that cup game against Charlton really exceeds our hopes for him. And it's just lovely to watch a player like him enjoy a purple patch. Elsewhere on the side, our concerns about where the goals are coming from seem to have disappeared. We're creating chances aplenty, and it's just a joy to watch us string some passes together, cut through teams, be a little bit more creative and assertive. And at the back as well, where we thought we might struggle to replace an entire defensive line, the replacements are starting to gel, so that's it's all looking up. We've got 3 home games in the space of a week coming up against South West London sides in the league against Sutton and Wimbledon, and that bonus cup game against Premier League Brentford as well. We'll be back with a panel discussion after next weekend's game, but for now let's turn to our interview this week. It was a delight to chat to Rob Phillips, he of BBC Radio Wales fame. Born in Newport, Rob has covered county and Welsh football more broadly for many years. He's been with the club throughout the highs and the lows of recent years, the cup runs, the playoff wins and near misses as well. In the interview, Rob talks fondly of his time reporting on the club, his interactions with managers and board directors of the past, including Justin Edinburgh, Graham Wesley, Dave Boddy, Michael Flynn. He speaks candidly as well about how he saw James Robey's time come to an end last year, and he also shares his thoughts on Graham Coughlin and how he's been able to build that side in his image. Rob also allows us to peek behind the commentator's box and shares how he prepares for matches and takes us through covering our big games over the years, including that 2013 playoff final against Wrexham and the 2017 Great Escape finale. This interview was recorded on the eve of the football season in early August, so while both Rob and I gave somewhat reserved predictions and thoughts about the season ahead, we might have recalibrated our views after the opening few games. I know I have. I was taking on quite a pragmatic approach and expecting a season of bottom half football this year, but to be honest, I've been blown away. I'll continue to say in Cocker we trust. You can't help but love the man and really sort of believe that he's the man to sort of take us forward. As ever, we do love hearing your feedback on the pod, so do leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. And if you're able to support the show, there are links to our Ko-fi account in the show notes. And if you're heading to an away match we're not at, we'd be delighted to hear your experiences from the game. So just drop us a DM on at 1912XLs on Twitter or whatever we're calling it these days. Anyway, without further ado, here's BBC Radio Wales's Rob Phillips. You'll have heard him on the airwaves covering Welsh football, his voice synonymous with BBC Radio Wales's coverage. Rob Phillips, delighted to have you with us.
Oh, delighted to be here, Jamie. Delighted to be here.
Thank you very much. Well, first up, I'm not going to ask you who you support, because I know whatever answer you give us will upset some of your BBC Radio Wales fan base. So perhaps, you know, because you cover all the Welsh clubs, don't you, on your sort of coverage. So perhaps instead we can start a little bit more broadly. We can maybe start thinking about, you know, the general state of play of the Welsh clubs and Welsh football as it stands. You know, are you sort of feeling, you know, in a sort of buoyant, optimistic mood, or are you a little bit more, I don't know, on the pessimistic side? If you're the latter, you'd fit right in here at 1912XLs, by the way.
No, don't do yourselves down. I listen to your podcast a lot. Am I pessimistic or optimistic? I am always optimistic, because every fan is, football fan is, at the start of the season. They all think their team is going to do brilliantly. And then realism tends to strike in, sometimes after one game, sometimes after a few games. So we get it. But that's what being a football fan is all about. If you can't be optimistic at the start of the season, when can you be? And generally, I mean, let's look at it. Cardiff and Swansea in the Championship, which is probably the most competitive league of all, I would say. I mean, you know, you can't say now who's going to win the Championship. I don't expect Cardiff or Swansea to win the second tier, but you just never know. Whereas Premier League, I mean, I've seen Premier League games, covered Swansea there for 7 years, Cardiff there for a couple of years. Would you bet against Manchester City now? It's almost a one-horse race, I would say. I may come back to haunt me at the end of the season. And of course, in League Two, you know, let's mention it now. You've got Wrexham back there, and it's the first time since, what is it, 1988, that all four Welsh clubs have been back in the Football League. I think that is fantastic. And for me as a commentator, two Welsh derbies, or rather four Welsh derbies this season. What's not to like about that?
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it?
It is.
I'm kind of the same view as you. You know, it's much more exciting in the Championship and in League Two, you know, than it is watching, you know, Man City win every week 5-0 or whatever it is. And yeah, I think because of that, you're right. We go in with this sort of sense of, yeah, who knows what could happen? You know, it could be a fantastic year for Welsh football.
It is. Yeah. And I think sort of if you encompass all of Welsh football, you've got the women's national team on the up, women's football generally on the up, let's be honest about it, which I think is terrific. And then the men's national team. I mean, I've been really lucky. I always say it. I'll say it again now. I've probably got the best job in the world, as far as I'm concerned, because I love Wales, I love watching football, and I've covered Welsh football at international level, but also club level, for what, 25 years on the Beeb, a good 15 years or so on newspapers before that, or in fact, 20 years or so on newspapers before that. And this is a golden time for Welsh football, has been a golden time for Welsh football. So you just look back since I became football correspondent, which was 2013. Newport back in the league after 25 years out, whoever would have thought, playing a Welsh club at Wembley. You know, in 2008, Cardiff got to Wembley, have been back there since, so have Swansea. They've won at Wembley. So I've been there was a stage when I was going to Wembley virtually every year. You know, Newport and the trophy final. And then the playoffs, we all know what happened in the league playoffs as well. So it's just been brilliant. And then to cap it all, after 58 years, Wales reach the Euros, get to France, end up in the semi-finals, and they follow that up with another Euros qualification and a World Cup in Qatar. I've been truly blessed. You never hear me grumble about the... I do grumble sometimes about the state of clubs and the state of Welsh football, but actually, generally, we've lived through an unbelievable period, virtually all the clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take that step back, don't you? You can like grumble about the day-to-day stuff or like what's happening right in front of you. But like you say, if you take a step back, all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, like you say, Welsh football teams have been to Wembley countless times in the last decade or so. And it is a huge change from, say, the football that we were seeing in the 90s and even like the early 2000s as well. I know you sort of, if we say maybe segue this to Newport in particular, obviously Newport's sort of, trajectory since the reformation in 89, obviously they've been on quite a roller coaster, haven't they? And like the non-league stuff is, I mean, it's obviously a far cry from what we're seeing today, but it still had its sort of fair share of adventures. I remember our Conference South days in the sort of the mid-noughties when I sort of first, really fell in love with the club. But I mean, what about your memories? Because I believe you were at the Argus beforehand, weren't you? Before
I was, yeah. I mean, I go back well before all that. I was born in Newport in St. Willis Hospital. And I was brought up, I always say, on the terraces at Somerton Park. And I remember going to watch Newport in the days of, well, even Tony Buck. And then John Relish as a player. And then, he was a big hero of mine. And then suddenly he's the manager of the team I'm covering. One of my ambitions going into journalism was to report on Newport County, which I did for the Argus in the 80s. Jimmy Mullen was manager. I had some great times. Bobby Smith, and they weren't great times for the club, but John Relish and Leighton James keeping Newport up that year. I remember as a youngster going to watch the Workington game when Eddie Wood scored the goal that kept Newport in the league. So you go to all that. Then I sort of read the writing on the wall and I moved to the Echo to cover Cardiff. And that was just as the old Newport County were going out of existence. But then I was in Lycett for the start of the new club. And little did I think, it was just extraordinary to even contemplate that 25 years on, Newport would be back in the Football League, just rising from the ashes and to go through all the battles against authorities, against the FAW, various exiles, Morton in Marsh, what a place that was. What a place synonymous now with Newport football, whoever would have thought. And that day in 2013, I'd started covering Wrexham when I joined the Bee for the first time. And they were Newport against Wrexham, I must say, in 2013, was one of the hardest games I've ever commentated on. Because I loved the people at Wrexham, people like Geraint Parry, the long-serving secretary, one of the nicest men in football. They were really good as well. And then Newport County, a club which was really dear to me. And it was a tough, tough game to commentate on. But I've said this before. I don't know whether you know this, but you remember that season, Newport were way behind in games and they were playing a Thursday night to catch up in games. And I always remember the late, great Justin Edinburgh. I was down there for a Thursday night match a few weeks before the end of the season. And we went into the old kitchen and I said to him, look, he said, I said, Wrexham had been sort of waiting around in playoffs, a bit like Kidderminster. They were pretty guaranteed. Newport were... We'll get in there. And so we knew at BBC Wales who we were going to cover. And I said to Justin Edinburgh, I said, I'm going to be doing the Wrexham semi-finals, home and away against Kidderminster. So I won't be at Grimsby and I won't be here for the Newport game. I said, but I hope both clubs get to Wembley. And he said, Rob, he said, Kidderminster, he said, that'll be a high-scoring game against Wrexham, but I think Wrexham will beat them. And he said, we'll sneak past Grimsby. I said, all right, okay. I said, what about the final then, Justin? And he went, I'll be honest with you, Rob, they'll play most of the football, but we've got the strikers to get us over the line. And I think that's what's going to happen. I will never, ever forget that conversation because that's exactly how it turned out. And I remember saying to Justin in the tunnel at Wembley afterwards, you better do the lottery tonight, mate, because you could be on a big winner. Remember that conversation? And it's just extraordinary. Those sort of tales will live with me forever.
Great guy. Yeah. And sorely missed, obviously.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I remember that season well. You say it was hard to commentate on. It was much harder to watch in the stands, I tell you. I'll tell you that. But yeah, it was a nervy match, wasn't it? It was a nervy match right up until that first goal went in. And yeah, I was just sort of crossing my fingers for extra time at that playoff final.
But... Well, if you remember, I commentate now with Andy Morrell, who was at Wrexham at the time. And we still sort of smile about it. In fact, he can smile more now because Wrexham are back in the league. But I remember speaking to Dave Boddy, who was the chief executive, I think, at Newport at the time. And I said, how much is this going to be worth? And he said, it'll be worth about £1 million if we go into the Football League. I remember describing Christian Jolly's goal as the £1 million goal. I was quite proud of that, but it was all about Dave Boddy, really, who's now at Coventry, of course. It was really tough. It's one of the few games, I'll let you into a bit of a secret, one of the few games where I've sort of written notes at the end for the final whistle to cover both eventualities and a draw as well, but both eventualities, because I really felt on edge, treading on eggshells to be right down the middle in the commentary. But what a day.
Yeah. What a day. That's really interesting, because I hear stories about, you know, the kind of prep that the commentators will do for games, and some will like almost like write out like the eulogy or the, you know, the ending, you know, and then read it out of your piece. Or is that something you say you rarely do that? But it was just for that game. It was just so tense and so tight.
I do a lot of prep on players, on the club. I'd imagine, probably no exaggeration to say, I do about 3 to 4 hours prep on every game I do. And the way I do it, I do sort of, I've got it electronically now. I've moved it. I used to have stickers to go in a book, but I did the Wales USA friendly at the Liberty State or Swansea.com Stadium a few years ago, and all my subs blew away. So I thought, that's going to end. So I've got a stencil now. So the Newport players are all on a stencil, little details about them. And then I have stats about the game and the club, the manager, all this sort of stuff down the side. And I do that for both clubs. So it helps when you're covering four clubs, you can see them regularly. And so I don't have to do it every game. So I can almost turn up at a Newport game and do it off the top of my head. But you've got to have those details. And actually, it's the other stuff I quite like, not so much the stats, but it's the Victor Willis. We were talking about it today on Radio Wales, actually. Victor Willis of Village People had a house in Newport, which is a stat I always come out with. If I can think about it. So it just, I think, well, fans get bored with stats. They don't mean a lot in the context of it. They can do, but sometimes they don't. So I'd rather give them a bit of needless trivia, really, which just pleases me and makes me giggle. But no, I don't often write out. I never write out word for word what I'm going to say, but I do sort of jot down notes. So, you know, how do you prepare for Mark O'Brien's life-saving goal against Notts County to keep Newport in the league? You can't prepare for that, really. No. Just call it as it is. And I smile with OB now, because actually I didn't see him put it in the net. I saw the ball go in the net and I guessed it was him, the way he was running away celebrating. Thankfully, it's one of the best guesses I've ever made, because can you imagine getting that wrong?
Yeah, you'd end up having to dub that over for the archives, wouldn't
you? Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that was another absolutely magical game. And yeah, that goal, that turn, that sort of swivel, and then sort of left footed half volley, left footed cross from Pipey as well, which everyone always sort of maybe doesn't really remember, but like I think it's the only left footed cross I can recall him putting in anyway. But yeah.
What I remember most about it is that, well, two things actually. One, I had to stand up on a seat at the back of the then Hazel stand at Rodney Parade so I could see over all the crowd, because I'm not very big, as you well know. And I couldn't see what was happening otherwise, particularly after the goal had been scored. But the other thing I remember is when Mike Flynn took over, and I'd known Flynnie pretty well, and great character, just synonymous with the club. But not everybody got on with Graham Wesley. And I actually did. I saw Graham Wesley's last game. I commentated on it. It was the Orient defeat.
4-0, yeah.
4-0. And I think it was either the next week or the week after, Newport were at Morecambe on a Tuesday night. And actually, I tend to text managers when they go and say, thank you for everything. Graham Wesley was an awkward cuss on times, but I actually thought he was okay. At least he never gave you bland answers, Graham Wesley. Maybe not always the answers you expect, but he wasn't bland. There's nothing worse than the boring manager pre-match. But he made sure you're on your toes. He would test you as well. But what I will say is that I was just in the car park at the Morecambe ground. I think it was called the Oval, if I remember rightly. I think it was there. I had a text off Graham Wesley saying, enjoyed your questions over the time I've been manager. Sorry, it didn't work out. That sort of thing. And that's good with me. So if I meet Graham Wesley again, actually, if you look back, he did a favour walking out that day, because I think any later, the Great Escape wouldn't have been on.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, I mean, what was it, 12 games in the end that Flynnie had? Yeah, and as well, like you have to remember as well, like Flynnie didn't really have the option to bring in any players, because it was what, March time, wasn't it? So he was,
yeah, it was.
Left with the players that Wesley had brought in. And yeah, I mean, like you say, what a turnaround. And yeah, Flynnie's, yeah. Are you surprised that maybe he's not maybe gone up a division, because obviously, you know, he had his time at Walsall, now he's at Swindon. Would you have guessed like, because there was probably maybe a season or so, certainly before he left Newport, that Flynnie was really in like high demand, and like he was getting linked with every single, you know, football league job that was going. Yeah, you're a little bit surprised that he's not maybe moved up a level?
Yeah, I think it's been difficult for him. I think there were huge expectations at Walsall. Myself and Nathan Blake saw the Newport game at Walsall last season, the one all draw. And I've got to say, they were fine when they were leading 1-0, but when the equaliser went in, and County deserved a point that day, you could see the crowd starting to turn. And we both said hello to Flynnie afterwards, because you do with Flynnie. He's just the joy. And we sensed then that things weren't going perfectly for him. So I wasn't totally surprised when him and Wayne Hartwell went towards the end of the season. But I'm not surprised either that he got immediately the Swindon job, which he's been linked with plenty of times. I mean, in my time, when he was Newport manager, we used to fend off all the time sort of stories about him going here, there and everywhere. And in fact, people from other clubs were asking me about him. Because he has got something. I mean, you know, we talk about Newport as such. They punched above their weight big time, not just the FA Cup exploits, which were ridiculous. But Flynnie got himself a really big reputation, not only for being able to match big teams, to beat big teams, Leicester, Middlesbrough, Bristol City in the sort of early days, Leeds United. Not just that, but also he had these great contacts. I mean, has there been a better loan player at a club than Ben White? Because I'm struggling to think of any. I remember watching Newport at Leeds in the League Cup. I think Josh Labadie scored after about 15 minutes to go one up. They lost 5-1 in the end. But Kevin Ratcliffe was alongside me. And after about 10 minutes, he said, who's the left back? And I said, oh, that's Ben White. He said, where's he from? I said, on loan from Brighton. He said, for how long? I said, a season. He said, that is remarkable. He said, he's the best player on the pitch. He said, how have Newport got in for a year? Well, thank Mike Flynn and his contacts and Lenny Lawrence and Paul Trollope and all those sort of people. But Flynn had more to him than just being a decent manager. I think, and the other thing, you'll know this, Jamie, I used to love the fact that if things weren't going well, he'd just throw on a load of subs. And so often it would work without any real thought about, well, how this could end up. He just did it. And so I still think he's got more to, there's more to come from Michael Flynn and more to prove as well, I think.
Yeah. I think, his dealings in the loan market, I mean, we were blessed with, several sort of young guns coming in, weren't we? Over the last 5-6 years, we've been very fortunate. And I think at this level, it's hard not to get too attached to these players because you know you're not going to hold on to them forever. Maybe not even a whole season if they're doing a job. And I think that's maybe what happened a few times. We had a lot of players get recalled in January, didn't we? But hard to replace
well,
those
look
as
at
well.
Scott Twine, look at Scott Twine, look at Ollie Cooper. I was raving to Swansea fans about Ollie Cooper for his time at Newport. And now he's a Welsh international. Antoine Semenya now playing Premier League football.
And World Cup football.
It's not just a coincidence, is it?
Yeah, not a coincidence.
Yeah, quite. And World Cup football as well. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that kind of brings me nicely onto, you know, obviously having to punch above our weight. And we've been sort of doing that for years and years. And we're going to have to carry on doing it this season because obviously Graham Coughlan, he's got to deal with, a lot of players going this summer. He's got to deal with, very limited budget and to try and sort of bring in who he can and as many sort of, bodies as he can. And then he's got to deal with a highly competitive League Two, table this year where there's a lot of teams with, decent levels of budgets and it's going to be very competitive. How do you see... I know you're actually quite a big fan of what Coughlan's done so far, aren't you? But how do you see that sort of then progressing into his first full season at the club?
I am a big fan of Graham Coughlan. I sort of feel he fits the Newport DNA. You know, we talked about 25 years of struggle to get into, start a new club and develop into a football league club and that unbelievable journey. I feel that, because Newport have had to fight for everything, I feel he's absolutely, he gets the DNA of the club. It's very much in his spirit as well. Some of the football last season wasn't great. And actually, I was a bit disappointed. I always thought they got rid of James Robey a little bit too early. People can argue about that because I liked the way Robey was trying to develop the team. But I've spoken to James since. And I'm not sure he has too many sort of bad feelings about it now because, again, maybe they acted just in time. What he did, I thought, Graham Coughlan, really well was stabilise the ship, made Newport a little bit more durable, made them harder to beat, definitely, and gave them a bit of steel, which showed, I thought, after January when they picked up big away wins, not by big scores, but winning at Barrow, winning at Hartlepool, nicking games, making it worthwhile. Grimsby, I think, as well. I was there for those, and that was a tough spell where they had long trips, but they were going to places, hanging on at times, but actually picking up huge points because, let's be honest, the home form was pretty poor last season, very poor. I think 6 home wins, wasn't it, for in the league last season. So I liked Coughlan for that. I liked Harry Charsley coming in January. I thought he signed shrewdly. I thought the two youngsters, Charlie McNeil, Callum Kavanagh, thought they both added a bit. Yeah, they're not sort of ready-made League Two players, but they actually had a bit of something about them. He coped with the injuries. And so I think, I've been listening again to Graham Coughlan. He knows what this season is going to be all about. He's not jealous of the wealth at Wrexham, but I bet secretly he'd love the same wealth. I remember asking him towards the end of last season, is the club rudderless with all the off-the-field stuff going on? But he said, well, not on the football side, they're not. And that's where I feel they're not on the football side. Yes, he has to operate within a very restricted budget. They're probably going to be the lowest budgeted club in the league. But I think I put on the BBC World Sport preview today that, you know, that phrase you use a lot, Nkoko we trust, I think it's going to have real resonance this season, because a lot of Newport have relied on him to get in some players, to be honest, without spending a lot of money. And so there'll be that. I don't suppose any of them are really household names, bar Adam Lewis, which was a real rabbit out of the hat a few days ago. And I think he's a really good recruit again, because I was really impressed the way that Robbery and him developed him last season on loan from Liverpool. So I think that's good. And you just feel that whatever weaknesses Newport may have, they've got a goal scorer up front, despite all his critics in Omar Bogle, and they've got a manager who knows his way around the division, knows how to go to places, tough venues, tough gigs, and come away with maybe not something that is aesthetically pleasing to see, but actually home with points in the bag.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. We'll happily take the points over the beautiful football that, you know, we like. I think, like you were saying, we admired what James Robey was trying to set out and do. And we know that this style is completely different. But, you know, needs must at the moment. When you're operating on this shoestring budget, you kind of have to sort of limit yourselves a little bit. Not that, maybe this group of players is going to be, you know, a lot more, positive, and the style might be a lot more beautiful to watch than we might think. But
you never know, because you know, when Liam Shepherd left, you thought, well, where are Newport going to get as good a right wing back as that? And then Cameron Norman pops up. Cameron Norman goes. Well, who knows now? At right wing back. Who knows what will happen there? But you know, it does happen. Let's be honest. County will not be a club fancied to make top six or top seven. And if I was to ask you now, you'd probably say I'd take where Newport ended last season, because let's face it, when he took over, well, I think they were 3 points off the bottom two, and they ended up 15 points, was it, away from the relegation zone, comfortably away from the relegation zone, even though he would never admit it. Even though at one stage there was even talk about, well, maybe sneak into playoffs. He never said that, but silly journalists like me were starting to think that. You never know, just a few more points. He wasn't buying any of that. He was straight down the line. No, never mentioned relegation.
No, he never did.
Saying, I never mentioned relegation. Did at the end when we asked him about it. He said, I didn't once say the word relegation. All I wanted to do was improve things. And you've got to say, with Joey Dunn, he seems to have done a good job so far. But make no mistake, this will be one of his toughest seasons, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I think so too. Before I ask you for a general sort of prediction, or like whether you think they'll sort of muddle through, I just want to go back to what you were saying about James Robey. You mentioned that you thought he might have been let go a little bit too soon. We've had a lot of debates on this very podcast about that subject, and when you were obviously covering the club at the start of last season, and I think it was the home form in particular that was pretty dreadful. It was a dreadful run of no wins at all at home. Did you see the writing on the wall? Was you said Robey didn't really have many complaints by the end of it? Did he kind of see it coming? Did he feel like he could have maybe turned it around?
I think he did. I think you've got to go back to the season before last, the end of that, when there was. At one stage, you're in a really good place for playoffs. And then it started to all unravel. A lot, I think, about injuries, particularly in the midfield. He had this great way, didn't he, of having midfield players who he could pull out and replaced with another midfield player without any real sort of diminution in quality.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, yeah, goal scorers up front in Dom Jeffries. So that helped. But then it started to unravel, and the form, unfortunately, went into the start of the next season. What I liked about the club when they appointed Robbery was they seemed to have a project. They seemed to have a plan. It was Robbery was the coach. Then they brought in a sporting director or a director of football, whatever you want to say. And I thought, well, if you get rid of Robbery, what happens to the plan? That was my thing. I understood the results. I understood why a club would act on results. Flinney went through some poor times, mind, but mm-hmm. they didn't. They always had faith in Flinney. But maybe the writing was on the wall. As I said, I could see it coming, but I was hoping that they'd hang on to him. Now I think they probably made the right decision to get rid of James Robbery when they did, as harsh as that sounds. And one of the reasons why I say that is that I was there for his last defeat. By memory, Rochdale, a defeat at home to Rochdale. And you know where I sit at the back of the stand. And I know a lot of the Newport fans because they have the same seats every season. They know who I am. And they know I do a phone-in afterwards, after games. And I've never seen so much venom and anger at the final whistle. Tell him to get rid of him now. He's got to go. This sort of thing. And I thought, wow. And James looked, you know, it was impossible not to hear it.
Mm.
I mean, it's a very vocal area behind the dugouts anyway. That's where the county fans, the singing county fans go. But there was real anger and real venom in the comments. They weren't shouting at me. I mean, they were shouting at me, but only because they felt frustrated that they couldn't say it to somebody in authority, but I could, sort of thing.
Mm.
And so that's, you know, it was an awkward press conference afterwards. He dealt with it really well. You have to ask the same questions. Are you still the man for the job? You heard the, you know, I've done it countless times. It's not something I enjoy, but the good managers, the experienced managers know you've got to ask it. And yep. we all asked the similar questions as you would. He dealt with it, and then he was gone within a couple of days. And then the project went, because the director of football went soon afterwards. And clearly, given what he said at the end of the season, Graham Coughlan was no fan of him anyway.
I do have one last question for you very quickly.
Go on.
And it's all about this David Buttress stuff with Rodney Parade and the Dragons. And everyone was getting very excited last month. Of course, like, we don't know what the real implications are. Going to be for the club, Newport County, the club. But you know, we were getting all excited, dreaming up a sporting club de Newport kind of dream scenario where it's like this kind of one big community club. Would that be a potentially exciting move if there were, you know, that everything was sort of a little bit closer together, if not under one umbrella, but you know, a few more sort of closer connections?
I went to a funeral a while ago of an old Argus colleague of mine, Robin Davies, synonymous with Gwent Rugby for years and years. And David Buttress was there. And I know Mark Jones, who's the Rodney Parade was the Rodney Parade ground manager, Dragons director now, isn't he? Or managing director, whatever. And he introduced me to David Buttress and I said, when are you going to buy County? And he said, well, look, my dad, I think it's his dad, is a big County fan, season ticket holder.
Yes, yeah.
You know, give me a chance. I'm going to sort out the Dragons first. If it happened, I mean, it hasn't been a total success in Bristol, but if they had a similar sort of sporting setup to what Steve Lansdowne has created at Bristol, I think it would work because Rodney Parade has got so much going for it. I know it's a rugby ground, let's be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that into consideration. But how many other grounds can you go to in the Football League where a walk across the bridge and you've got restaurants and bars? So as an away fan, you'd love to go to Rodney Parade because everything is close. You walk across the river, and they're in the football ground. It's very few these days, central city town football grounds. That's one of them. And I think it works. Really good atmosphere. Actually, I think County do the atmosphere very well. The Hey Ho Newport County was a stroke of genius. Simple, but it does build up the atmosphere. We on Radio Wales loved doing games at Rodney Parade because you know there's going to be a good atmosphere before the game. That 5 minutes before kickoff sometimes goes down on kickoff, but before it, it's a really good atmosphere, and so I think there are possibilities there. I've heard so much talk of, well, what about a stadium outside of town, you know? But they are years in the making. I can think of one or two stadiums. There's a sort of second stadium at Manchester City, where their reserve team plays. It's about 10,000 all-seater, probably all that Newport and the Dragons need. But actually, Rodney Parade has got a charm all of its own. And being so close to the city centre, it's got a lot going for it anyway. So, you know, if David Buttress can, now the Dragons will be taken back. I'm not huge on rugby. I'm an expert on rugby, but I think they're now either on the brink of or in private ownership. Then it opens up possibilities. I certainly think that there's enough interest in sport in Newport for the clubs to do more together, to maybe sell season tickets to both, to maybe combine that. So that's something that, you know, that's probably a long way down the line, but I don't see any reason why it shouldn't work if it happened.
Well, whatever happens with the David Buttress Dragons Rodney Parade thing, I'm excited anyway. I think he's got his head screwed on, and it can only be good things for the city of Newport anyway. Right. Well, I think we're going to sort of wrap up there. But before I let you go, Rob, I do have to ask your general thoughts on the upcoming season. We've spoken about Coughlin, we've spoken about all the great work he's done so far, and the season, you know, the challenges ahead this season. But what's your gut feeling for Newport County this season?
I'll say now, I don't think they're going down because of the manager. I think it'll be a tough season. If they could get the investment off the field, maybe in time for January, to just give him a little bit of leeway financially, I think that would be a big bonus to him. What I understand is that off the field, they are trying to get things sorted and trying to put things right. That will take a while, though. There's always talk of investment. Newport needs it, like every other club, but they won't be the only club who are facing a tight budget, an almost impossible budget this season. You know, there are very few clubs, I mean, you know, the one big exception in League Two, who don't have to worry about money so much. Newport will have to be concerned about that. But I think I would probably, Graham Coughlin would hate me saying this, I'd probably take where they finished last season now.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, I'd take 22nd right now. I'll be honest with you. yeah, and that's just the pessimist in me. I was at a couple of the games last year, and you know, as you were as well. And like you say, it wasn't a pretty watch. And I'll be honest, I've not been at the preseason matches, so I don't know really what the new guys are going to be looking like. But I'm just concerned we've lost an entire back line. Basically, we've lost Cam Norman, we've lost Priestley, Mickey, Aaron Lewis as well. You know, it's a lot of players going, a lot of experienced pros at the same time. But like I say, I don't know what the guys coming in are really sort of going to be able to offer us. So I'm just going to wait until Accrington, first game of the season.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you're right. Big losses. Mickey Dimitri, I think, is a huge loss. I know he had a tough spell during the season, but actually he's a stalwart. Cameron Norman, I sort of half expected him to go anyway. Aaron Lewis, who I thought got better when he moved into midfield. He's a good footballer. And Priestley Farquharson, yeah, he will need to be replaced as well. But Nathan Blake tells me, I'm relying on Nathan on this, but he remembers Nathan Wood in the Newport Academy, and he liked what he saw then. And I think Rhys Griffiths does a really good job at Pennebont. They've let, obviously, James Waite arrived at Newport from Pennebont.
Mm-hmm.
He might be one to look out for. I don't watch preseason games as a rule because I don't read anything into them. But I think goalkeeper has to be good. I think Nick Townsend is decent. I think if he can get the back four, five sorted, and you'd expect Graham Coughlin with his background to sort out the defence first. Aaron Wildig steer clear of injury, and Omar Bogle continuing the vein he did last season. Then, as I said, I take 15th now.
Absolutely. Rob Phillips, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's also really nice to hear that you're one of our listeners as well. So we really appreciate that.
Pleasure. Anytime, you know that.
Oh, thank you very much, Rob. And yeah, best of luck for the season. Hope you enjoy all four of the Welsh derbies that that you'll get to watch. I mean, we're probably dreading two of them at this end, but we'll see, won't we?
No, it'll be great. And as I said, do you know, I would sum up my sort of view is that I heard Steve Bunce, the Radio 5 boxing commentator, say, I've reported on boxing for 38 years, he said, and I've never done a day's work in my life. And actually, this is my job. And I can honestly say, and not once do I ever wake up thinking, I don't want to go to work today. So bring on the season.
Rob Phillips, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.